Hi, so my name is João Graça. I'm the CTO and co-founder of Unbabel. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the approach we take at Unbabel with our goal of reducing language barriers. So we do a combination of AI and humans. And this is what I'm going to be talking about, and feel free to interrupt me at any time with questions. A second? Okay. All right, so the problem that we're trying to solve is that 75% of the world does not speak English. And so if you're a company trying to go online, most of your customers or new customers might not speak English. So providing only customer service or your web page or your product description in English is a big problem. And in fact, you can trace that in the amount of money that you are not making, that you're leaving on the table. I'm having some hard time. Okay, so basically the current translation market is around $34 billion and it's growing two digits every year. But this is mostly like more traditional content. If you look at like customer service emails, user-generated content, this content nowadays is either not being translated at all or being translated solely by machine translation. And the problem is like the return on investment on this content is not enough to for the cost that the human translation costs nowadays. For instance, like I told you, there's like machine translation. Think about Google Translate, which is affordable, if not free. So if you actually use it through an API, you have to pay something, but it's very cheap. It's super fast, but the quality is not good enough, especially if you're doing like outbound emails to your customers. On the other hand, you have professional translations, the normal language service provider, but it's super expensive. The average is 10 cents per word, and it's very slow. It doesn't scale. So this is an example, a really hand-picked example of a translation of JavaScript from Japanese into English. And I'm quite sure that you have no clue what he's talking about. So this question, English is faulty, thank computer to translate to help, sorry, and often the go time installer error is vomit, and so on and so on. So to be fair, this is like a really bad example that we found out. It's a true case, and the newest Google system is slightly better. But the fact is, you still get a lot of critical errors when you just do machine translation. So one use case that we are very fond of, and is kind of like the segment that we're taking with more strength right now, is customer support. So as soon as you have your website on multiple languages or your product description in multiple languages, you're bound to start receiving customer support in different languages. And right now, the current solution is to hire people that speak those languages. That raises a big problem. So you need to have 24/7. So you need to have a lot of people. You need to take into account the peaks where you get more emails, or you can use like a professional service, but this becomes really expensive. Like translating a customer service ticket for $15 doesn't really make a lot of sense economically, and also it takes a lot of time. So I'm going to talk a little bit of this use case in the future, in a bit. So what was the thing that started us thinking about Unbabel in the beginning? So I did my PhD in machine translation and machine learning some years ago. And one of the things that you normally do when you're doing competitions to evaluate the performance of machine translation is that you have two tracks. One is like produce a one best solution, which is what you found on Google Translate. And the other one is like basically output like 1,000 solutions, the top 1,000, and then apply another algorithm for those the top 1,000 pick the best. And the performance increases a lot. What this means is that the actual solution a lot of times is in the model, but since you're doing like a probabilistic search, it just got the wrong path. So in this case, it translated El Libro Para. So it's free, it's available, instead of it's free of charge. So right here is basically the wrong translation. But if you had someone that could just like, with one click, change the path, then you have a perfect translation. No need to write, just one click away. And we start thinking, okay, so can we do something with this and with the mobile? And basically make translation much more inexpensive and scalable. And that's where we started. So this is another interesting quote from Francis Hawk, which was the person that was leading the Google Translate team some years ago, which basically what he says is like the data that Google translates every day, and this is kind of old, so it's even more. It's more than all the professional translators in the world could translate in 1 year, just to give you the scale of what we're talking about. And so the vision at Unbabel is the following. On one side, if we get to have perfect MT, which I don't believe we will. If you had like perfect machine translation, basically your job will be done. But I don't believe we're going to get there in the next 10 years, and it's a common, most people that work on machine translation don't believe on that, especially if you want to send like customized content. Like for instance, you get a ticket from Pinterest and you want to reproduce the voice of Pinterest on the other language. On the other hand, if you only use professional translators, that's very cost intensive. So what we're going to, trying to do is like use bilinguals, people that speak two languages but don't have like a proper study on translation, and make them produce a professional the professional job. And at the end of the scale, you can actually use monolinguals. So people that just look at the final output and see if it's fluent. Okay, so this is like our main pipeline. And the idea is you get a text from a customer, and then you go through preparation stage. Preparation basically means, you know, taking all the markup and all the stuff, just get the content, split the content into proper sentences, annotate all the client information that you have, like glossaries, which are particular words that the client wants translated in a different way than the usual. For instance, again, Pinterest, the word pin, they have very strict rules on how you should translate it, which might not be the most common translation for that term. Finding name entities. Name entities are names of people, names of streets, which normally are a problem to translate. If you try it on Google Translate, you'll see it mixes up a lot. And a bunch of like natural language processing information that we can put to help the next of the steps. Then we go to the part of the automatic translation, where the goal is to provide the best initial starting point for our editors. From then on, at each point, we have quality estimation, which is an automatic algorithm that tries to detect, is the text good enough? Can I send it to the customer, or should we still have to do some work on that? And then you have the distributed translators. So we have a big crowd that I'm going to talk in a little bit, that gets the original text, corrects the errors, submits. It's either good enough to go to the customer or we put someone else on the loop. So this is the general pipeline that we're using. Sorry. Okay, so in terms of translation, it's more than just machine translation. So given a text, we search if we already have sentences that were completely translated for that customer on that context, so we don't have to redo the work. This is something that all translation agencies use. It's like, it's usual. And then we have our own specialized machine translation. What does that mean? It means that we aim to train an engine for each client. We're not there yet, so we're mostly like training engines for vertical, for tone of voice. But this is what gives you a big boost in terms of performance of machine translation for that particular content. And I'm going to show some numbers. After that, we still do a step of automatic post-editing. Automatic post-editing, the idea is that given that we have the machine translation and the editor's correcting the text to become final, and we have all the data for us, we can train a system that tries to automatically correct the errors that come out of machine translation. And at the end of this step, you have like the first translation that you're going to provide to the community. And the good thing is that this is creating a self-learning loop. So the more we translate and babble, the more data we have to train our systems, the better our systems become. And this happens for automatic post-editing, machine translation, and so on. By the way, if you have any questions in the middle, feel free to interrupt me. We have time. Okay, so domain adaptation. Why is this important? So if you look at the engine like Microsoft Bing or Google Translate, the goal there is to have like a universal machine translation system. So give you any text, you provide a translation. And text is very different. For instance, most of these engines are trained on Newswire corpus. So you pass it like a text from a conversation, it will completely get screwed up, get confused. On the other hand, if you have enough data from a particular domain, you can adapt the model. And adapt just means train all the data, then use the rest of the data and retrain and do some iterations, and the model will become very good at that domain, but much worse on the general domains. And this is what we do at Unbabel, using the data that we're getting from our customers. This is some examples. So if you try to translate, we'd be happy to help. The translation in Google is not that good. This again is a particular example because it's not related with the content, it's just related with the sentence itself. And if you look at our engine, it's much more what we expect to receive on a customer service email. This is a more interesting example. If you look at the two answers from Google and Babel, the Google one seems correct as well, but it's using the wrong formality level that Pinterest demands. And so our engine picked it up, so it's less work for the humans to correct. This is some chart comparing like the Unbabel engine on this domain, so customer service tickets against Google, Bing, Yandex. This was before the new Google Neural MT system, or Bing Neural MT system, they're equivalent. If you put them, they're still below Unbabel domain adapted, but now we have like Unbabel deep model adapted, which is even better. So basically, take whatever you have, put Neural, and get like a scale up of like 5 points. The scale is a blue score, which is a normal metric for machine translation, which measures how much does the text that you produced seem similar to the final desired output, the truth. Okay. So the other piece is quality estimation. And this is kind of the holy grail, and we're still far from reaching there. We actually have the best system in the world according to all the major international conferences of quality estimation. We've been working a lot on this. And the goal here is, given two sentences, like a source and a target, how good is this? And then you have different levels. One is the word level QE, which tries to go for each single word and say, is this correct or not? Or you have the sentence level QE that says, OK, this sentence is good or not. The second one is easier. And like I said, it's not completely perfect, but it's being very useful for us right now. So what we do is like you take some source sentence, some machine translation, and some final output, and you basically train a deep model to predict if it's good or bad. And the way that we're using it at Unbabel right now is we normally have two people in the chain. So if the first one corrects the machine translation, and then the second one looks at the output of the first editor, just to make sure that he looks for things that the editor forgot to correct. And then we can use this to skip the second editor. And what we're deploying now is also don't send to the customer if the quality is really bad. So the models are trained slightly different. And this is the holy grail, because if you could get this to be 100% accurate, then the entire machine translation problem would be solved. Because every time you produce a machine translation, you would say OK or not. And if not, refeed it to the engine, give it a score, retrain, produce it. But again, this is harder or the same difficulty than machine translation. OK, so now we already have like the original text to provide to the editors and a way to assert if the quality is there or not. So we then resort to a community of around 50,000 editors that are spread across the world. They range from like some professional translators, some freelance translators, a lot of university students, high school students, stay-at-home moms. Basically, the requirement is like they have to speak at least two languages. And then we rate them from 0 to 5. And the way is like you join Unbabel, and first you go to what we call a testing phase. You have 5 very simple tasks that are just trying to explain how the system works. And from there, we can already cut some of the people who are just fooling around with the system. That's fully automatic. Then you go to the training phase, where basically what we try to give you is either blogs that we crawl, or we recycle some of the tickets we have, and we give it. You don't get money, we don't get money, but you do get evaluated by our top player evaluators that will give you a score. And then if your quality is bigger than 3.4, you become a paid editor. And then as you progress, you start becoming an expert, which means that we trust your quality more, or you know that you're better at a particular domain or the other domain. And right now, besides the testing phase, is very much manual. So we have like linguists in-house and spread around evaluating. And we're working on basically, again, trying to learn from our data to evaluate editors automatically. It works pretty well to eliminate the bad ones. To distinguish between the medium and good ones, it's still a challenge. So this is the evaluation interface. So what you see here is the source, the target. Then you can press on the previous version and see what was the text that the editor received, because basically what you are evaluating is the editor performance, not the quality of the final text. And this was something that took us a long time to understand. So let me give you an example. Let's say that I have 2 editors in the chain, and I'm the first one, and I do an amazing job, and you're the second one, and you don't do anything. You're going to get a 5-star, but you can suck. But we don't know, because we just gave you 5-star. Then when you're the one that are doing the translation that is going to the customer, you might just send something that's really bad. And translation is one of those things like being a goalkeeper. You know, you can do a lot of good stuff, but if you fail one, the customer is going to be very unhappy. So that's something that we need to be very careful, and we pay a lot of attention. So now that we have a curated community, the second question is, can we understand what each one of you is better at translating. So you can be better at like medical terms, legal terms, and the others. And so this is where the cues come in. So let me give you an example and see if this works. So we have a bunch of editors, and we have a bunch of tasks on the platform. So the yellow thing says, how long has the task been on the platform since the client submitted? The red thing says, what's the SLA? Because for instance, if we're doing customer service, we guarantee that on average, we return the ticket in 20 minutes, meaning that the agent replies in his own language. So let's say that I receive a ticket in Chinese, it goes through Unbabel, and I only see it in English, and then I put hashtag Unbabel, I reply in English, and I press send. We guarantee that 20 minutes after, your customer receives it in Chinese. So this is the SLA. So basically, if we're already like really close to the SLA or have passed the SLA, the tasks go to a red queue. Being in the red queue means that the first editor that goes to the Unbabel platform and requests a task, if he's paid on that language pair, meaning he can do tasks on that language pair, the task goes directly to him. We're just favoring speed. Now, if we still have some time, then you can play some games. So depending on the time that you have, you might say, okay, I only want editors that have a rating of 4.2 or more. Or then after 2 minutes, we downgrade to 3.8. And then after 2 minutes to 3.6, until the task eventually moves to the red queue. The other thing is, if you can start basically marking for each document, what's the topic? So is this about sports? Topic. Topic, basically, is this about sports? Is this about recipes? This is one way of doing a topic classification. The other way is doing induction. So you create clusters around news, and basically for each document you get a graph like this saying, oh, this document is 20% cluster one, 5% cluster two. It doesn't have a real meaning, but it has other things that make it easier to use. So if you do this for every topic, then every time an editor is evaluated, you're actually building a profile of the editor according to the topics. And then if he's in the green queue, you can actually pick the editor that is available, that's better for that topic. And apparently this is really, sorry about this. This is really cool. So if you just do a regular distribution, which is, was the first one that I mentioned, you just get it from priority. On our experiment, we got a rating of about 3.8. And if you actually use the topics, you get a rating of around 4.6. There's some difficulties here, and this was an experiment we did that we haven't pushed to production yet, so we're just using the downgrade of quality. But it's something that we're working very actively to push it. So the other part of the vision of Unbabel is like, if you want to scale, so Unbabel aims at being the translation layer of the world. Basically, people will be able to replace Google Translate by Unbabel. That means that we need to be able to push the cost down so that it's not relevant. And the other thing is like we need to have a massive scale of people always available if we want to do the SLAs on time. And that is going to happen most likely on the mobile. So most people coming online, especially in China and those countries, are using the mobile. And so we have some pretty cool mobile interfaces. The basic one you can just edit. And then this is the options one. So this is the one based on the intuition I told you. So this is the translation. You can just drag blocks. And then for each block, you can press it, and it'll show you like alternatives. So you can pick a different alternative. If you're not happy, you can still click on it and edit by text and submit. So the original naive vision of Unbabel is that you have an Erasmus student that's on the subway going home. And during that time, he does 4 or 5 tasks and gets money for a beer. This turned out to be harder, but it's working, and it's pretty cool. And the speed on the mobile, not the editing speed, but the total speed that it takes to make a task, is much faster because the time to task, which is the time that the queue is waiting for someone to pick it up, is much slower on users that have the mobile, just because the notifications work better. You just get the beep on the cell phone, get it into the task. Okay, so we have the original text, we have the curated editors, we select what is the editor that's going to do the task. Now, the next question is like, how can we help the editor to perform with professional translation, even knowing that he's not professional? And so the idea here is kind of, like when I have to write the text on Word, it really helps me to have the grammar correction, the spelling correction. And so you start thinking, okay, so we all from natural language processing, can we take this on steroids and look at the biggest errors that we have and try to come up with tools that mark the text and tell the editor, listen, we think that there's an error here of this type, and he can either correct it or ignore. And this is a smart check. So it tries to look for spelling mistakes, tone, formality, consistency. Another thing that's pretty cool is client rules. So most of like big brands have very specific guidelines on how they want stuff to be presented, either the words that they want to be used or the formatting. For instance, I want a non-breaking space between the number and the dollar sign if this is in Spanish, but if this is in Chinese, I want a different space. And this is something that you can directly inject here and show it on the interface. Why is this important? Because remember that we're a crawled community, and basically an editor is not working for a particular customer. He just goes to the platform, gets a task, and it might be from any customer, and the next one might be for any customer. So it's infeasible to think that you're going to be able to teach them what that client wants and all what the clients want, especially if you have a 20 pages guideline book. So this is a way to make it visible on the interface. Let me give you some examples. Here there's a basic spelling error. This is the
edit.
Yeah, so these are comments. These are some of the errors. The interface is kind of different now. There was like a revamp. There's a cool thing, which is a dictionary as well. So if you press twice on the word, it gives you the definition. And this is a particular spelling mistake. This is a client rule. So he wants the numbers to be written with digits, not letters. And this is just for this client. This is not going to happen for the other clients. Avoid the use of slash. And I think I missed one. OK, and again, this is a cool thing, because what we're doing with this smart check, and also with the annotations that we do for quality, so we sample around 10% of the jobs, and we have linguists annotating all the errors that happen, like using a linguistic typology of 40 types of inconsistency, agreement, and so on. And this is generating data that can then use it to train the quality estimation system. So the idea of Unbevel is all like, the more data we get, the better we can improve our technology, hence reducing the human effort. Okay, sorry. Okay. All right, and so the question is like, are we there? And right now, the translation industry, normally the minimum is around 6 hours. We're doing like emails on average on 20 minutes for our top 15, 20 languages. And we have a better version of Facebook Messenger. Yes?
What about contracts? Legal contracts?
We don't do them now. We start doing them at the beginning, and it's a completely different flow, so we stop doing them. We really focus on communication. So emails, chat, product descriptions, stuff that has a lot of volume is always being produced, and we can learn. Legal? No, not right now. We did it for a while, but then it didn't pay off. We need to adapt the system to do that. So what we're trying to do is adapt the system for each type of content and become really good at that, and then move along to another one. Yes. Well, the difficulty, there's a lot of difficulties. One is the length. So having a good interface for the length. Then it's like our editors are not professional translators in the sense that they don't want to have a job that's going to take 10 hours.
Yeah.
The other thing is consistency. So a big problem with this approach of post-editing is consistency. So all the systems of machine translation nowadays are sentence level. So they translate sentences individually of each other. So when you have a bigger document, you have to keep track of all the inconsistencies, like I translated this word here and this word there in a different way. We did do some contracts for a lawyer firm because they use their interns to do the post-editing. So basically, normally the interns translate from scratch, and for them it was much cheaper to send it through us and do the post-editing. And they were happy with the service because it decreased the time that the interns needed. No, it does, because the editors still do a lot of things. So the sentences are individually correct, and a lot of the inconsistencies are picked up. The thing is, like, it's harder to guarantee it's perfect. And especially in legal, you have to have agreements because you might be responsible for the translation that you provide. So we did some, we worked with them for a while, and now we decided to focus on this, and then we might go back there. But we have kind of like a chain of content types that we want to address. So right now, the legal documents? But why don't you use, because legal documents normally, they don't need like a very fast turnaround, so you can use a normal translator, where you just send the contract by email and it sends it back to you. No, that's true. I mean, I think one of the advantages of Unbevel is that you just plug it with your API or use the order form, and that's it. Both for clients and for editors, because translators spend most of their time fighting for translations, discussing SLAs, terms, blah, blah, blah. We can talk a little bit at the end about, so I might have some solutions to propose. And so basically, we have a demo. So chat is another context that we want to tackle. And here the problem is like, we have to be super fast. It's not real time, but it has to be around 3 minutes stop, 4 minutes stop, 2 minutes. And so what we're doing is basically, it's small sentences. So we get the sentence, we machine translate it, and then we use our quality estimation. If it's good enough, it's real time. If it's not, we send it to our crowd, but we put it at high priority on the queue. So for the language that we've been trying, we've been able to do it like around 1 minute, which is really cool because you're talking on like Facebook Messenger, and you don't know the language of the other person is talking, and you're just talking, and it works. Now, if we have to scale that, we have to put some more effort to keep those types. But this is kind of like the vision where we want to go next, because a lot of customer service is moving into chat. And pretty much, that's what I have. Thank you.
The cost and payments to the translators.
So okay, translators we pay between $8 to $20 an hour, and then there's some exceptions of people that get more money. Then the evaluators and the annotators get more. Costs, we used to have a fixed price around 3 cents per word, and now it's more depending on the contract, depending on the volume, but it's around 3 cents per word. It can go down depending on the volume, it can go up depending on the volume and on the what you are translating, but that's, if you want to mark a point, that's where you should be looking at.
I got a question. Do you guys have an API to communicate with your system, or do I have to go to the application?
No, it's mostly API. So the way to use this is like we have integrations with Zendesk, Freshdesk, Salesforce if you're doing tickets, and we're probably doing Dynamics sometime this year. Then if you're doing newsletters, we have an integration with MailChimp. If you're doing FAQs, you can use Zendesk or Salesforce that we're launching. Facebook Messenger, you can use Facebook Messenger, or at the end, there's always the API that you can connect to.
We have a particular interface and we have a web chat mm-hmm. that we provide to our customers, and we would like to use the service as an API, API to communicate with those customers and try to offer the service in different languages.
Yeah, cool. We should talk about that. So basically what you do on your chat is like whenever you get a text, you can identify the language to see if you know or not using our API, or and if not, just send it to Unbevel, and then we basically reply to you with the answer. So the way it works is like you post something and you send us a URL for callback, and then we'll call you back with the translation. It's really simple. It's really just one endpoint.
And the cost?
For chat, we need to talk because it's still beta. So we might find some way to test it out.
Chat, we also do tickets.
Tickets, I mean,
in general.
I'll give you the right email of the person to talk about that. Because that's, you have to talk, and depending on the volume, the language pairs, the content. But that ticket is exactly what we're growing more and doing more.
And Facebook?
Facebook Messenger. Yeah, we can try, we can integrate with you, but it's still in beta. So that's why we need to look where we are. But we actually are looking for some pilot customers for the chat.
Do you have any examples of success case?
Yeah, so okay, just one thing. I was told that this should be a super technical talk. And actually I was kind of afraid because I didn't go into detail about the neural machine translation models or the machine learning. That's why I didn't put all the usual stuff. Yeah, we're working with like Pinterest, Oculus VR, Microsoft. A lot of. Yeah, well, most of our clients are in San Francisco because our, like, although we're all here, the official company is there because we went through Y Combinator. So most of our customers come there. eBay was a customer, Amazon, Google. Oculus VR, Pinterest, Skyscanner. Sorry, I should know this by heart, but I'm the CTO, but yes. Anything else? Okay, cool. Thanks a lot.